on this edition of the Car Jam podcast.
I had Fred selling a motorbike, and he was saying, like, you know, it's £800, and he just got all these text messages, what's the lowest you'll go? So he kept sending him back 45 degrees or you'll fall off.
I think it might have been a Sunday or something, and you know what France is like, it sort of dies a death.
I very much do know what France is like on a Sunday. It's basically like if you live alone and you walk around the house on your own, that's kind of like what France is like on a Sunday, except you don't know where anything is.
Muttering to yourself, I haven't seen anyone all day.
How fast does it go?
Well, it goes at 70, officer.
Yeah. Yes, 69.8 and never more. Oh, brilliant. So you've got an intro as well, have you?
I've got an intro to your intro.
Should we put them in a jar and make them fight?
We'll put them in a jar and pick one out of a hat and say, well, you go first.
Yeah.
Well, now, all I was going to say was a rider to the whole episode, I was thinking, is if at any moment you find that we're laughing at you, we're not. We're kind of laughing at all of us. And that will become clearer when Mike reveals what the subject is, because I think we're all guilty of doing this to some extent.
And that, indeed, it is operations that go wrong.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's collections, isn't it? It's yes. Which I'm presuming is car collections. We've done our wonderfully vague sort of, let's just do collections and leave it at that and have absolutely no discussion further about what we're talking about. So, again, it could be just off on two completely different tangents. But, hey, let's start with, hey, welcome to Car Chum. Tony, I've got a question for you. What's the biggest number of cars you've owned at once? Stop drinking your coffee and listen.
It's tea.
I wish I pre-warned you, because, you know, you... How many?
Eight. I think it's only eight. You know, maybe nine. The problem was I started to hide them. And once they've been hidden for a while, they're hidden, they're out of sight, out of mind. That the idea in hiding them was to stop other people being bothered by them.
Yes.
In the process, of course, I stopped being bothered by them. And eventually,
and thought, oh wait, I've got a space out there now. I'll buy a car.
Well, it wasn't just a space out of my place; it was a space at kind of parents and a space here. And I'd kind of squirreled them away. There was, in fact, even one in some woods. I kid you not. There was a Triumph Dolomite 1850 automatic, which I spent an entire summer of my life welding up, because it was actually quite, this one was quite special actually. It was one of those that I'd passed on my commute to work for donkey's years, and it had started off in lovely condition. One elderly lady owner, and I'd asked years before, probably a decade before, knocked on the door and said, sorry, really sorry, it's embarrassing, you know, I'm not scary, don't worry, but I love your car, you know, and oh no dear, you know, that's my car, yeah, blah blah. Anyway, clearly she passed, and then it sat there and it deteriorated, so I had to, but it had only done 30,000 or 40,000, so eventually I bought it. Anyway, long story short, welded the thing up, and then of course I had no blooming use for it. So used it for a month or two, didn't want to sell it because I'd put too much work into it and it probably wasn't worth a lot because it still needed stuff doing. MOT and whatnot. And I hid it in the woods.
Still there today.
No, I did drag it out.
If you go down to the woods today.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, eight
the
or nine.
Trail of oil. Yeah. Well, yeah, back to...
Eight or nine in one go. Yeah.
Welcome to Car Jump. Today's topic is, how long can you make a really simple one-word answer?
Well, it would
nine.
Be three, eight
Thanks,
nine.
Tony. So, those of you still listening, what's the biggest number of cars you've had? Tony's nine. I've had four, and basically, which is, you know, really small numbers, but four cars at once, there's always, one's not insured, one's got no petrol, one you haven't got the keys for, and the other one's got the toolkit when something goes wrong. I found it an absolute nightmare.
Yes.
Owning four cars.
Yeah.
So, how people cope when they've got hundreds, I really don't know. I do know people who've got, you know, 15 cars, 20 cars, 30 cars. They're very, very rarely all on the road together.
It's too expensive.
It is. Unless, of course, you are the Sultan of Brunei. He's got over 7,000 cars. At one point in the 1970s,
how
I
many?
Reckon he was over 7,000. They reckon he was keeping Rolls-Royce and Bentley afloat in the 70s just with what he was buying.
Really?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is pretty good going. Thank you, the Sultan of Brunei. Presumably, there have been other Sultans of Brunei, obviously, so he's not just the one who's been doing it for many, many years. But, they reckon his... there was a figure somewhere, which, if I was any kind of broadcaster, I would have written down. But there's something like... He's worth, like, $20 billion or something. $20 billion, which is just mad. Mm. But yeah, he's just got a vast collection. You know, sort of, you would maybe collect toy cars and get all the colours. He can do that.
Yeah,
he can. He's powerful enough that he can stop, you know, get them to stop a production line and make specialist cars for him in the colour and the interior choices that he wants.
I don't know though, Mike. When I hear these things, I don't know whether to feel impressed or nauseous.
No, you can do both, can't you? I mean, I've vomited sometimes and been well impressed with what's come out.
Lovely. How lovely. No, look.
Hang on a minute, I'll show you.
Kept it.
Ruth!
Tupperware. Look, you're talking about having four and struggling with it.
Yes.
And eight or nine and beginning to hide them in the woods, which, incidentally, I doubt that the Sultan of Brunei has to bother hiding them in the woods. But
honestly, I can quit any time.
look, the problem that there's a difference there, and there is a fundamental difference, isn't there? There is normal trying to, you know, live around using four of them, which is pretty difficult on normal means with a normal storage facility, etc. And the other one tips straight into collection, doesn't it?
It
and I think probably the number there, we're talking about collections, so yeah, relevant that I should draw it back directly to that. You're talking anything? What's the break point for a collection of cars? What's the number? Do you think?
I mean, when does it just go from ownership to a collection?
Yes, because four is ownership. Eight or nine is you know, you're beginning to get a problem.
When there's a theme, maybe. So if
okay.
you bought,
yeah.
I'm just guessing here. This is by no means counselling. If you're listening and thinking, all these guys are going to help, we won't. Tony might buy a few off you, but we're not going to actually be able to come to a solid conclusion, professional or expert. But I would think if they develop a theme. Mm-hmm. I mean, the theme of my four were they came along cheap, and I've always fancied one. But you know, if you start to think, oh well, you know, I've got the, you know, the Mercedes 200. Now I'm going to get the 230, the 250, the 300. Mm-hmm. Then that becomes a collection, I think. If the objects are related in some way beyond just, you know, that I wanted that.
You see, now I naturally laughed there, and that's what I mean. I'm not. If you've got a W123 Mercedes 200, 230, 250 and 300. You see, I'm laughing at it. I think that's funny if you have, but I'm not specifically laughing at you because I can imagine owning a 200, 230, 250 and 300. That would be a lovely collection to me. I get it, but I still think it's funny.
I mean, I should, of course, I'd sort of post-face this by saying it's only lack of space and money that stops me being exactly the same as you in terms of, over the years, if I'd managed to get every car that I was offered or wanted, I would have hundreds. I think most of us would, because there are the, oh, I've always wanted one of those. Oh, that's so cheap. Oh, that's an investment, which you never sell if you're actually an enthusiast. And then there's the stuff that, you know, someone says, oh, this is, you know, I'm going to scrap this tomorrow unless someone comes and picks it up. And you think, well, if I had a truck and a trailer and a field, that I would immediately concrete over because fields are the worst thing to store a car in. So, you know, concrete that.
Terrible for the environment, grass as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's terrible for cars. And if cars rot, that's bad for the environment. So I think you should probably concrete every area of grass you can find. But yeah, that would be full. There would just be things that I've saved. I know people who have. I know people who've had barns. And that comes because someone's phoned them and said, I've got the last, you know, Subaru brat in the world. Mm-hmm. And they go, I don't really want one, but if it's going to get squashed, I'll take it. I'll save it. So, you know, this is not necessarily a cry for help. It's a good thing in many ways.
And I love reading those stories that you know, I mean, barn finds is a bit of a thing at the moment, isn't it? You know, it's a bit voguey and trendy and, you know, selling it with the dust on and all the rest of it. Parking, if you'll pardon the pun, parking that for a moment. I do like reading the stories of, you know, this collection has been uncovered. And what always piques my interest is when it's a collection of ordinary stuff. You know, the Ferrari 964, and no, that's a Porsche. And I was
that's a particularly rare one. I mean, if you can find,
I was trying to generate a random number there, and I came out with
extremely random amalgam Ferrari Porsche that they contributed. I had an engine at both ends. That was particularly unusual. If you've got one in a barn, it might be worth upwards of £100.
Talking of exactly that kind of collection, there is a museum, and I've invested too much of my life this morning trying to find this museum again because it's in France in a place called Leon, not as in burger, L-E-O-N, L-A-O-N, near Reims. North of Reims.
Big racetrack, yes.
And, anyway, this museum, I was on holiday there, family holiday, and wherever I go, I always search, you know, is there a car museum or something that I can go to, you know, while the others go and do something else. Or rather, they go and do something else while I go to the car museum. But this one was in the back end of nowhere on an industrial estate. So we all trooped off to it. They took one look at it and said, no, I don't think so. There's a fascinating garden centre next door. None of them being into gardening either.
Ooh, a cemetery.
But yes,
that's right. Things like that. Oh, look, a bread-making factory. Let's go there.
I think it might have been a Sunday or something. And you know what France is like, you know, it sort of dies a death.
I very much do know what France is like on a Sunday. It's basically like if you live alone and you walk around the house on your own, that's kind of like what France is like on a Sunday, except you don't know where anything is.
Muttering to yourself, I haven't seen anyone all day. Yeah, no, that's because you're by yourself in your house. Yeah,
you literally walk around thinking, isn't that, you know, has there been some sort of nuclear warning that I missed? Where do they go? Where do the French people go on Sunday? Anyway, topic for another time.
Anyway, so they went off to there, and I went into this place with sort of slight trepidation because it is just an industrial unit that's clearly kind of run down. And I walked in, and my French is not great; it's even worse now. But it wasn't great then.
Hello, English. How are you?
No English came back. But, you know, anyway, I paid my, I think it was €4. So, like, you know, £3.50. Because I only know that because I've looked at the reviews now this morning, TripAdvisor reviews and whatnot. People complaining about it. It was €4. Why have you, you've got no grounds to complain. But it's all in foreign, so I couldn't understand it. But the complaining and giving it one star. And you think, this was really unfair. It was one of my favourite museums I've been to because it was unpretentious to the extreme. I don't think they'd washed some of the cars. They were just parked in effectively a sort of a warehouse.
But they built the building around them.
Yeah,
maybe.
Pretty much. But no,
left them where they were.
A couple of them had, several of them had flat tyres, you know.
I like that in a museum. Yeah, that's what I really like. Yeah. A real state of neglect. That's what I look for in a museum.
But the cars were terrific. Everything from a sort of, you know, well, basically, pick a brand and it was there. Pick a model and it was there.
Delahaye.
No, I knew you were going to do something like that.
Tucker.
Yeah, there were 30 of them.
Gordon Keeble. Yeah. Dieter Moser Mangusta. They're one of them. Bugatti Royale.
I'm just going to let you finish. I'm going to have a sip of water. You reel off these brands.
Peugeot 504.
Yes, there was one of them.
I'm trying to steer it back to French makes.
Did they have Visas?
Matra Simca.
Yes. Rancho. There was everything. CXs, BXs, 25s, 404s, 305s. I used to love a 305, and there was there. But then to keep your interest, we all like a French fancy, but it went beyond that. Ooh. Triumph 1300 front-wheel drive, just sitting there. There's no plaques or anything. So there's no there's no explanation. There's just next to a first generation. I'm sorry about this. I'm going to say the word Saab 9000. You know, the Type 4 made with the Lancia and Alpha and all the rest.
I thought that was Chroma. Too new. I don't know exactly when you went to this museum, but a Saab 9000's not that old, is it?
Yeah, 86 onwards, 85, 86 onwards, and this was a first generation flat. Fronted one with body kit, unusual car, great. Daihatsu Sherrard. Can't say I'm particularly into them, but I like seeing one.
Are you sure this wasn't just an undercover car park? And they took £3.50 for you to park. You turned up on foot and they thought, oh, well, mad English, if he wants to stand here for 2 hours, fair enough. He hasn't got a car, we'll take his money.
It was a bit awkward, I'll be honest, because there were the two there. Two people behind the desk, and that was it. And me walking around this place and crunching slightly on the dust as I went round, you know. I don't mean to be stereotypical, but never mind no smoking. This big warehouse had the aroma, you know. So when I left, you know, it smelled like I'd been smoking myself. Rover 800. On the lattice alloys, very nice. And how about this? You'll know what it is. Ooh, I really should know, and this is slightly embarrassing. I don't, but Starsky & Hutch car.
Yes, a Ford Gran Torino.
Gran Torino, that's it. Just randomly sitting there. So some film cars sitting there. Ooh. Again, no explanation, nothing. So I really liked it. Anyway, it's called the Musée Automobile Léon. Sadly, I went in 2017, as I look back at my photos... Closed. Gone.
Oh.
It closed in 2017 as well, so I was probably the last one round.
Yeah. Good thing you didn't drop your wallet in there or anything, because you were like last one out, and then they barricaded the door. And you say you were searching and searching and trying to find this. How long did it take then to find you a car museum in Lyon that was called the Museum of Cars in Lyon? What was that a particularly long Google search? From what angle did you approach trying to track down something that sounds like it couldn't have been named more sensibly if they'd tried?
Well, I thought I thought we'd holidayed somewhere much further to the west than we had. So the search did conduct itself across most of France.
Fair enough. Okay.
Anyway, but that's a collection anyway. That or it was a collection. All sold now and suddenly at auction. Gone. Finished.
Oh, good. Well, at least they didn't just rot away there. I did find that piece of paper with Sultan of Brunei's name on it, Mr. Hazanal.
Great. Thanks for that.
7,000 cars, 209 BMWs, 574 Benzes, 452 Ferraris, 179 Jags, 382 Bentleys, 134 Koenigseggs. I didn't even know they made that many.
No, they didn't make that many, surely.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought. And then the rest is just made up of Lamborghinis, Astons, a Cicero BDB Maestro.
Who?
See, I saw, Cicero BDB Maestro. Now, I was just searching through it and I thought, crikey, he owns a Maestro. but sadly, it's not the Austin Maestro, because I would love to see that in amongst like 470 Lamborghinis.
But that's what I'm 1.3
saying. 1.3 BL Maestro. Yes. Well, that's the excitement of these things, isn't it? It's finding the unexpected.
Exactly. But that was the joy of that museum, as opposed to, if it had been all fancy pants and just full of all that stuff, I wouldn't have paid €4 to go in and see 200 Lamborghinis and whatnot. It just doesn't interest me. I don't appreciate them. I just don't want to particularly spend a whole €4.
We touched on barn finds a minute ago, and I've no idea if this is true or not, but it did just remind me. I was obviously in various careers, I've wandered around and ended up on farmyards trying to find places to photograph cars and so on. But I mentioned to a friend, why have they always, farmers have always got loads of stuff hanging about? Mm. And he reckons, and again, I've done no research into this, but in the UK at least, when a farmer buys something as a work vehicle, they don't pay tax on it. They only pay the tax when they sell it, supposedly. This was his reasoning. So they never sell anything because they're saving, they sort of make that money in saving it. I've no idea if that's true or not, but it would sort of explain why. I mean, obviously farmers got loads of space and they're always fixing stuff and they want spare parts for things, but they do seem to accumulate vehicles at a more rapid rate than the rest of us. And God bless them.
It's the space. I think, I've no idea about the tax status, but the it's space, isn't it? In all honesty, because again, I come back to that, about we're not laughing at you, we're laughing at us thing. Honestly, if I had endless space, I would just simply never get rid of a car. Not least of all because I hate selling cars. It is the thing I. And every time I do it, which is not very often, I swear I will never do it again, ever.
Sell another car.
I'll buy my next Toyota, and I will be specifically because it's a Toyota, and therefore I can keep it forever. Only because I don't want to sell it. I'd rather give the things away, to be honest. At the end,
Just because it's such an ache? I mean, is this because it's a wretch to sell them, or because it's just such? I'm trying not to swear here, but just such. It's because it's such a ache in the. To actually go and sell, and advertise and deal with people.
It's dealing with people. Just endless time wasters and hagglers. And I don't mind a haggler. I mean, that's absolutely fine. But then, eBay, and then they turn up and say, oh, well, let's do the deal outside eBay. No, let's not do the deal outside eBay. I mean, I don't have any great sympathy for eBay, but I've signed their contract. They've provided me a service. I'll give them the money. That's what I agreed to. I'm not going to skin them for a tenner or whatever. And then they say they'll come at 6, and they turn up at 11. At night. Yeah. And I've had this before. And you're dealing with these people. At, 11 o'clock at night for a £500 car. And no.
I had a friend selling a motorbike, and he was saying it's £800. It's worth £1,000. £800. For a quick cash sale, and he just got all these text messages. What's the lowest you'll go?
So he
kept sending him back 45 degrees or you'll fall off. But yes, it does become a massive. This is maybe another topic for another
time. I think it is
selling. But that's how you sort of accumulated stuff. I mean, what I like are the people who. It turns from a passion into an obsession, and they do become basically the only person left with any of these items. I was speaking to a guy literally last month who we were talking about his car, but he said, are you into motorbikes? I'm not really. I could appreciate them. I don't know anything about them. And he said, I've got these sort of 50cc Honda motorbike, and it's something he bought in the 80s. But he said, people found out I've got them and they kept selling them to me cheap. He said, I've got 34 of these things now. The wife's going spare, but as indeed are the bikes. But he's sort of become the unofficial guy with all the parts now. Because it's got to the point where he's actually selling them back to the 7 other people who've got these in the UK because he's cornered the market on these.
Do they have a mafioso nickname for him?
Sadly don't. Not that he told me anyway. But yeah, I know it's...
I'm always in two minds about that. When I see, I see a... I don't know, let's just... I was going to pick a car. Why is it when I go to pick a car on Car Chum, I can't think of one that, just like that. A rare
Esso
car.
Revolta. Yeah.
I never think of a... You see, I would have said ISO, but Esso, I never think of those.
1958 Pontiac Bonneville with fuel injection. Does that help you?
Yeah, well, that'll do.
Okay, there you go.
No, I know. Let's pick something different. How about a Vauxhall Carlton? right?
Never heard of it. What's that?
Well, what in the continent, an Opel Omega or Amiga?
Oh, one of those. Yes.
Anyway, right, so, and I think, well, they're...
The Lotus, not the Lotus.
200, no, not the Lotus, let's just have the straight six cam in head engine.
That's what was your point? Get your point, Tony.
And I think, oh, I really fancy one of those. And I read an article, and there's, I don't know, 150 left or 25 or whatever it is. And then they put in the box, you know, at the bottom, you know, owner's perspective or whatever, or why I love them or whatever. And it, you know, it's John. And John's got 12 of them. And I think, well, hang on. You know, wait a minute. I want one and others want one. Why have you got 12? What are you going to do with 12 of them? So I'm always in two minds about that as well. And I think, can we not share the love around a bit so we can all... Because you can only drive one of them to the show, you know?
Yeah. I think the key to this is, again, what sort of person you're dealing with. If they're hoarding, then yes, that's one thing. If they are, however, finding these cars cheap, or, you know, it was going in through the scrapyard gates and I saved it, and if anybody needs a headlight and a bumper and a back seat, go for it. I paid 50 quid, I just want to get the 50 quid back, then fair enough. But if they're the sort of person who goes, I've got the last headlamp washer motor for this car and I want £2,000, or I've got the last windscreen, then, yeah, that's helping no one because cars are scrapped for the lack of getting a windscreen.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain things you can make. You can weld in a floor. You can't make your own windscreen.
No, quite. And very ordinary cars sometimes. You know,
absolutely.
You know, that were everywhere. Other museums, just finishing off on my museum thing, in Ronda, this in Spain, in Andalusia,
Wales, no, Spain.
There's a museum which I walked past and said, and we said, oh, I got to go in there sometime. Anyway, we eventually managed to go in there a while back, and it's called the Museo Lara. For the reason that the man at the centre of this has made it his whole life, this museum. So this museum is his collection of stuff, right? Yeah. And some of which has wheels and some of it doesn't. And it's absolutely amazing. What's he called? Antonio Lara Jurado. And he made... All of
the practicing now.
Yeah, he's got this sort of palace-y building in Ronda, which is a very pretty place. And so we've got to go in. You go in again. I think it's €4 again. It's nothing, and they've got everything in there. This man has collected. He's like 80 odd now, but he still lives in the building, and you can feel his presence. It's got everything.
Does that cost extra?
You know, clocks, watches, old film cameras, motorcycles, and you can. But the beauty is that things like the motorcycle and stuff, you can, and the old horses and carriages and stuff. Well, not actual horses, obviously.
The horses.
You can sit on. So you can climb up into the carriages and exactly, and sit on the old BSA motorbike or whatever.
Can you sit on the watches?
Yeah, no, the clocks.
Clocks. Yeah, said watches.
Yeah, while they ding and dong. I mean, there's literally everything in there. And you go downstairs and there's a whole torture section and weapons and, you know, I mean, there is something for everyone. Yeah.
Go back a bit. You go downstairs and there's
medieval kind of, you know, stuff. You know, they did
like witch burning equipment and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But
Iron Maiden, excellent. That sort of thing.
This is a real collection. I say, it's not really motoring, but it just came to mind when we're talking about collections.
Go to a torture museum and they just happen to have cars.
There's one.
I could justify this. There's a car over there.
There's one car at the front to make it socially acceptable on your way in. But
the rest of it's like a Vincent Price fantasy.
So I really respect this kind of collection thing where it's curated nicely, and it had been curated, and so I either love that either end of the spectrum where someone's put some massive dedication into curating and finding out about all this stuff and whatnot, a la that, or the car museum, which is it's just a collection of cars. And that's good enough for me. Either or. What I'm not so wild on is the, you know, the chintzy stuff where you pay. It's about value, isn't it? You pay £25 quid to get in, and you think, I'm only looking at some static shinies, you know?
But, yeah, and it's Ferrari, you know, like 80 Ferraris in a row. And the problem is, if you see a Ferrari in a car park, it's like, wow.
Yes.
You know, there's a Ferrari. If you look at 70 of them in a row, it's sort of, did they not sell the Allegro here then? You know, why? What I'd give to see a Capri. Because it's just like, oh, you know, it's a wonderful car, but 10 Testarossas in a row, you become rather blasé.
Yeah, no, totally.
And you start to wish, you know, there was sort of something else. So I absolutely agree. If you've got an esoteric collection, it's far more interesting than... Yeah, or even, even an Iso Revolta. Yeah, that, I mean, that was the other. Why did they not make the esoteric? If they were still going, that would be like their MPV thing, wouldn't it? That would be like their dual fuel car, the esoteric.
And
no one would ever actually understand it. And of course, esoteric, perhaps the most esoteric collection ever was a chap called Toby Halicki. Now, you need to bear with me. I will give you a little bit of background information. The film Gone in 60 Seconds, not the Nicolas Cage one, the original, the 1974 one, was made by this guy, Toby Halicki. He grew up in America. He was Polish descent. He had 12 brothers and sisters and a very, very hard upbringing. By 14, he was running his own body shop and spray painting there because he basically ran away from home and, you know, he had a very tough upbringing. But age 23, 1974, he made the original Gone in 60 Seconds. It's not the most amazing film, but it has got a fantastic car chase in it that lasts 40 minutes and wrecks 93 cars. Now, Toby ran a wrecking yard. He had collected cars for 3 or 4 years. He collected insurance write-offs and things. And he basically found all these cars for the film, scripted it, produced it, directed, starred in, did a lot of the stunt work, edited the film, promoted it, and even distributed it. This was either because he was a control freak or because he wanted every single cent of profit. It's one or the other. But a lot of what, and I urge you to sort of look into it, because it's a long, very dull film in places. But for somebody who's effectively done it himself, using friends, you know, like the mayor of one of the towns is in a very, very sort of slotted in appearance as, hey, look, here's the mayor at a prize giving ceremony, because the mayor had let them do a car chase through the town. So he said, I'll put you in the film. And there was a lot of that. It was an awful lot of, you know, why is that person in it? Because he lent them 4 Rolls Royces.
Right. Yeah.
You know. But he turned his... He made a number of other films after. He died tragically young in 1989 when a stunt went wrong. But he put a lot of the profit from Gone in 60 Seconds into his collection. And it was... There was over 100,000 toy cars. I couldn't find a figure for how many cars he had. But when you look through some of the films later... It is just, you know, he's got 4 Citroen SMs. He's got Aston Martins, Lagondas. He had a white Lagonda that he had this big sort of ex-factory that he kept his collection in. And he pushed a button in the car or on the desk and the whole sidewall opened. He just drove the car straight in and parked it next to his desk every morning when he did business, which is fantastic. But he had rifles, submachine guns were part of this collection, and as you say, clocks, huge amount of toys, 50,000 toy trains. One of my particular favourite things was over 100 hotel room keys. Apparently, every time he stayed at a hotel, he kept the key.
Yeah, no, I understand that. No, I understand that.
But it must have been a nightmare for hotel owners.
Oh, well, true. If they were actual, I suppose they were actual keys.
No,
the and not
actual
the plastic.
Keys. Yeah, the proper keys. Yeah, not the little plastic things. No. Not the do not disturbs.
Yeah,
the actual metal key to the room. They said he could never stay anywhere without keeping the key.
But no, I do kind of understand it because I grew up in a house where my parents had a here's a word that's not used very often, a terrarium. In other words, a glass
tortoises.
Jar. Yeah, but just a glass
Turtles.
Jar. No, it was just a glass, big glass jar thing.
Was it a glass jar?
It was a glass jar.
What was it made of?
Glass, actually, yeah.
Okay, and what was it again?
And inside, collection of, wait for it, matchboxes. No, matchboxes. Not cars. So every place that they went, they back in the day, you know, you used to get matches, didn't you? You know,
on
the table everywhere. So hundreds of boxes of matches, normally the little sort of disposable ones. Do you remember them? The sort of, you know.
Yeah, in like a fold over pack.
That's it. Yeah. But with the company logo on them, hundreds of them. It's only thinking back now. I used to love the smell, incidentally. If you put your nose over the
sulfur.
Yeah.
We all love a bit of sulfur.
How bloody dangerous was this, thinking about
it? Well, I was going to say, was that the house that burned down? Yeah, but
I know. Just thinking about it. There was this open pot of hundreds of matches sitting there. In the
thinking
was mad, isn't it?
Putting one back in by accident and the resulting blast being something like Christmas Island.
Can you imagine? It would be horrendous.
Yeah. Yes, I can.
I don't know what
probably
happened
why they
to
kept it,
it
in glass.
Yeah, because that would go off as well nicely. So I don't know. But yeah, so no, I understand the hotel room keys. That, and I used to, I don't anymore, I used to always, well, I still pinch them, but I use them, the hotel toiletries, because it's included in the room, right?
Oh, yeah, you pay for
course,
it, yeah.
Yeah, okay, you know. But I used to collect them. And the bathroom got insane with these little bottles. And if you keep that stuff, eventually it stinks. It's not very nice, is it? You know. So I don't know. I don't know why I kept them. But
I tell you what, it does do. It goes furry.
Right.
The ones from, I think I stayed in a, I won't mention a hotel chain, but it was a perfectly pleasant, you know, well-known hotel chain. But yeah, I kept this stuff for about 3 or 4 years because it's quite small and you think, if that's shampoo, I don't know what reaction it's going to have. Yeah, I'll chuck it in the case, as you say, we paid for it. But it turns into this little furry kind of, I don't know why, but it was a little bottle of fur.
Nice.
Like a chia pet or something. But yeah, very, 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 very odd. How the hell did we get onto that? Oh, yeah, hotel keys.
Yeah. Be the collections. Yes, they're all collections.
I do appreciate an esoteric collection. As you know, I have one or two model cars around the place. That.
How many have you got? Have you got loads or not?
I can't actually give you a proper number because I don't know. I mean, I bought another 5 yesterday, if that helps. I've got loads.
To a collector of model cars, is that an annoying question? Like, when someone looks at my car, and because I always find it slightly irksome, but I shouldn't do really, because someone's showing some interest, and they say, you know, how fast does it go? You know?
Yeah.
I think, well...
Or better, that drinks the petrol, doesn't it, mate?
Yeah.
It runs on air. Yeah, of course it drinks petrol, you fool.
Yeah. How fast does it go? Well, it goes... 70, officer.
Pretty quick. Yes. 69.8. And never more. just make something up. Oh, it's about 230 downhill. Be surprised how quick a Fiat Multipla can go with the wind behind it. I don't know, purely because I've never counted. But I would guess. Probably about, I'm looking around like the figure's going to come to me as I stare at them. Probably 1,500 plastic kits, 2,000, maybe 3,000 die cast.
Okay.
So, you know, as a round number, let's say 5,000.
And we really don't want to talk about this because it's not...
No, you don't.
No, yeah. It's really not something that fascinates me. But as a kid, I did have a lot of model cars, you know, I couldn't have a real car, obviously. My favourite brand was, and thank goodness you said it a few minutes ago, because, again, I wasted so long looking for this brand earlier and couldn't find it. Majorette. Yeah.
I've got one to hand.
Now, correct me if I'm
literally,
wrong.
Literally.
The reason I liked the Majorette, I don't know why I'm pointing at you, but is because you've got one in your hand. That's right. Because they've all got those wheels. Yes. The suspension.
Yes. They're French model cars. They're about 3 inches or 8-9 centimetres long, which is roughly 1/64 scale. They made a lot of contemporary cars.
Yes.
They started in the late 50s and they had basically torsion bar suspension.
Mm-hmm.
So the one in my hand is a Porsche 924 with a little opening hatch on the back. Yeah, really bouncy suspensions. They all look like 4x4s. But they made cars that you didn't normally see. I mean, we both grew up in the UK, but they made cars you didn't normally see. Mm-hmm. So there would be things like Matra Simcas, yes, and Matra Bargis, yes, and yep, all sorts of, you know, Peugeots that we didn't normally get. I've, yep, got a Peugeot 604 over there. I've got a...
Yes, I had a couple of them. And they all have tow bars on the back as well.
They did. This one doesn't. But yeah, they, okay, often most did of them made sort of caravan. Yeah, yeah, many of them had tow, yeah, bars. But yeah, sort of super bouncy suspension. And that was great because you could play car chases, yes, and sort of,
and
bounce
you could get
them
body
around
roll
and they looked like
and...
they were leaning.
Yeah, exactly. And that, so I always way prefer, because the Matchbox didn't have suspension, did it?
Some did.
Okay.
It varied.
Yeah.
I mean, as they got into the 70s and 80s, less so.
Right, okay, because the product got cheaper, no doubt. But the yes, yeah, no, so I did enjoy collecting the majorettes exactly for the reasons that you've just highlighted, so I'm not going to say all of them again, but it's absolutely those reasons.
All came with French registration plates on them as well, in the same way that Matchbox, okay, being a British company, inevitably all came with UK number plates.
Doggedly
stuck. And apparently
stuck
the designers... Matchbox designers apparently used to put their own number plates on or their own initials into the number,
really,
plate. Yeah. So it's quite often, you know, I've only found this out more recently, but there are people who worked there and went, oh, yeah, that was, you know, that was Dave's name, or that was, you know, his wife's name or his daughter's name. So they just, because they were doing the tooling themselves, they put on whatever they wanted.
And I know you're going to know the reason why it's called Matchbox, but for the benefit of someone that doesn't.
One of the chaps who started up the company, his daughter wanted something to take into school to show her friends for like what the Americans call a show and tell. Mm-hmm. He designed a little, it was like a road roller, I think. It wasn't a tractor, mm-hmm, like a little road roller thing. Built it in his own back shed out of metal and with a lathe and things. And it was tiny enough to fit into a matchbox, so she could keep it safe. She wasn't going to lose it in a pocket. They put it into a matchbox, and they got such interest, they started making them, and it turned into a company, and they kept the matchbox as a sort of, you know, a nod to the fact that they were that scale. They fitted, the original ones did fit into a matchbox.
It is... as far as my research is concerned, 9 out of 10.
Did I drop a point?
No, it was because the daughter was that school allowed them to take in toys,
take matches in,
if they could fit in a matchbox. And his name was Jack Odell, and he was one of three partners, yes, in a company that I've now forgotten the name of, but it really doesn't matter. Who made sort of, didn't make models per se, car models, but that's where that came from, and it became Matchbox. 1952. Now that surprised
me.
Yeah, that surprised me because I thought I just presumed it was, I don't know, pre-war or whatever, but not actually quite.
48.
Now, that's when the company
was kind of when they started.
Yeah, but I think the Matchbox was actually 52. But anyway, around about that time, anyway. I mean, they turned out to be one of the most profitable businesses. Period.
They did.
Because they did. It was so popular, like 100 million a year sold in America alone. 100 million. And they never spent any money, or basically next to nothing, on marketing or whatever, because it just grew itself within schools. And so every penny piece was profit. So they did very, very well.
It is quite fun. I've got, they're in the same way that the Hot Wheels became very popular over here, which is the American sort of version. I've got American friends who collect Matchbox and love the fact that they're British cars that they don't get to see. So we do sort of Zoom chats every so often, or they do live auctions over the internet.
I'm busy that evening.
Yeah, no, you will be. I always pick an evening when I know you're not around. And see your frowning face in the background going, this is a contemptible waste of time. I could be drinking a beer or hiding a car in the woods. But it is fascinating when they sort of, it's this little weird little car with a dog in the back. What's that? And you think, that's the MG 1100 AD016 that Matchbox made in 1962. But I have to sort of pop in every so often to tell them what they're looking at, because they're not really aware what a Cortina is.
The
59 Chevy Impala. I know what this is.
Yeah.
But when some of the more recent, you know, the Fiat 1500 Matchbox made, they don't really know what they're looking at. And I will go, no, that's a BMC Pininfarina. It's not a Citroen CX. The winter evenings fly by, as you can imagine.
No, I mean, I really am busy that evening. Each to their own, though. Maybe I'll be philatelising that evening. That is safe to look up. Many thanks, as ever, for joining us on this edition of Car Chum. If you like what you heard, there's plenty more. And you can find that on our website, car-chum.com. Do stop by and say hi in the leave a comment box at the top of the page, or ask us a question maybe. Make a subject suggestion too. Whatevs, we'll be back in a fortnight. More often, daily on socials and through the website as well. That's car-chum.com. Back soon. Pip, pip.